tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greeting friends around the world, education in our Western world has lost its way. Today, educators say they do not try to teach character, that they don't try to teach virtually anything, as I'm going to show you on this program. As a matter of fact, they're telling your sons and daughters as they enter colleges and universities every single year that they cannot know. They're conditioning these students in advance that they cannot know. Now, in the field of higher education, an absolute revolution has been occurring. In the past couple of decades, we always thought of the ivy-covered walls of the big colleges and universities as the places from which the leaders of tomorrow's society would emerge, the doctors, the lawyers, the legislators, the military leaders, the scientists, the artists, the authors, and what have you. And they were the traditional scenes of quiet research, of study, of a serious endeavor to come to grips with the big issues that divide the world and to come up with solutions and answers. Educational institutions were institutions of great respect. They were thought of as cultural institutions of higher learning, where truly exalted and higher knowledge of a technological nature and a special nature was taught. But Mr. and Mrs. Citizen is becoming a little bit disillusioned with higher education today, because instead of the quiet ivy-covered halls of the big buildings of the respectable college and university institutions of yesteryear, increasingly we find riots, sit-ins, teach-ins, riotous demonstrations, melees that like as not involve the highest administrators in the institutions, that sometimes even result in their being fired or their retiring. And we find that educators themselves say they are at a loss to stop all of this because they find themselves in the grips of a system that goes way beyond them. Now, most educators know that something is seriously wrong with education in the Western world today, but they don't know what it is. Education has lost its way. It's descended into an entirely materialistic and collectivist system of regimentation, whereas one Berkeley student put it, perhaps in the words of a college student, we can better understand it, he said, "The only time I am noticed up here is when I spindle my IBM card, when I mutilate my IBM card." Now, educators know that something is wrong, but they feel helpless to do anything about it. It's about time we took a good long look at education, at what it is supposed to achieve. What is education anyway, and what is it supposed to achieve, and what is wrong with it today that our colleges and universities are increasingly becoming hotbeds of absolute violence, of disrespect for government, for the flag, for law, for police agencies, for authority, for the home, the family, the church, the very culture that pays for the education many of these students are receiving free? Have you ever seen education defined? Education is defined as that attempt by the older generation to instill within the younger generation its concepts, its culture, its language, its music, its history, and also its moral values, its principles, its concepts that are guidelines for life. Now, I think all of us know that education is vastly and widely different in different countries. Take the subject of history, for example. Can you imagine how wildly at variance the history classes would be between Japan, Germany, Great Britain, and the United States, perhaps better add Russia, when it comes to all that led up to World War II? Can you begin to imagine the wildly varying stories that would be told by historians about World War II in these different areas? Well, the same thing is true in the fields of science. The same thing is true in many fields in education. Now today, the youngsters in our colleges and universities are just smart enough to know that they do not want to have inserted, like so many funnels in the tops of their heads, all of the knowledge, the same codes, the values, the standards, the morality, and all the rest of it, that they can now see led the older generation to make such an incredible botch of the world. Education is defined as the attempt by the older generation, I repeat, to instill inside of, or to put into the minds of the younger generation, all of its, the older generation's, culture, its language, its art, its literature, its music, its laws, its moral codes, its conduct, its guidelines for life. Now, the younger generation is getting into college and universities today, and they're finding that that they are being taught exactly what's wrong with the world. They're finding what is happening, that the world is in a state of ferment. And so we see increasingly educators defending the idea that youngsters are seeking some new code, some new morality, not returning to the codes and the morality that guided their fathers and mothers, but trying to find some brand new code of their own. But what is happening is, instead of finding any new code, a lot of them, I don't say all, but far too many, are returning to the oldest code of all, the code of absolutely no code. And instead of finding any workable code, any so-called new morality, this is the nice catchphrase, the dressed-up word by which it goes today, dressing up illicit sex, pornography, and absolute freedom of action to the point of anarchy, dressing it all up into a tuxedo and calling it a new morality doesn't make it moral. It's about as immoral as anything you could ever possibly see. So instead of finding any new concept, instead of finding something that really works and by which they can live, and which really pays off, and after all, the old adage, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, still applies. How do you know it works unless you try it? And they're trying it, but it's not working. It's not bringing happiness. It's not bringing success. It's not bringing release from their mental turmoil and frustrations. It is not filling up their lives. It is not finding for them the goals that are important to them. It's not giving them stability, maturity, emotional stability, and development. It's not giving them any sense of satisfaction or gratification. And so instead we see that they are adding a greater evil to the former evil, and evil plus evil doesn't make good. And one sin plus one sin doesn't make righteousness, and one poison plus another poison does not make no poison. So instead of finding a workable solution, a new morality, a workable code, many of these youngsters are returning to the virtual law of the jungle. Of I'll do whatever I want to do to whom I want to do it when I get good and ready to do it, and may the devil take the hindmost. Now, you know, when you look into the spirit of science and education, you almost are tempted to say that you can't blame them, but that's not true either, because they are responsible for their actions just as much as I am and just as much as you are. You are responsible for what you do, and you're responsible before the community and before your law enforcement agencies and before your neighbors and your friends and before your God and before yourself. So I won't say that you can't blame them, but I want to give you real quickly just precisely what they are being taught in the colleges and educational institutions of today. You might call it the very essence of the spirit of science. Now, this is taken from a pamphlet which is put out by the Educational Policies Commission of the National Education Association of the United States and the American Association of School Administrators. And in effect, this little booklet is presenting to them a broad policy-forming suggestion by which many of the classes in the overall curricula of educational institutions, especially in the field of science, and of course this is the big thing today in this highly involved technological, scientific-minded world of ours, this is for the formulation, then, of the very classes to which your sons and daughters go. Now, the worldwide pursuit and spread of science and technology is, of course, recognized. After the United States recognized that Russia had the jump on them in the space race, a fantastic science binge occurred, and our educational institutions began to emphasize more and more mathematics and miniaturization and all the technologies, all of the material physical sciences. So here were the recommendations. At first look, they sound pretty good. 7 points they gave. One, they believe that the following values underlie science. One is a longing to know and to understand. Now, at first glance, that sounds great, but let's read on. Two was questioning of all things. Three, search for data and their meaning. Fourth was demand for verification. Fifth is a respect for logic. And sixth is a consideration of premises. The seventh and last point was a consideration of consequences. But the rub comes in exemplifying these points where the booklet went on to magnify all of them, and it said this. In reference to that first point about a longing to know and to understand, that's great. That's at the very heart of all of education. You've got to long to know. You've got to want to understand. It sounds good, but then here is the way that is broken down by this government agency. And the way it was presented to all the educational institutions around the country upon which they are to formulate their classes. The spirit of science is, at bottom, a longing to understand. It seeks to understand because it accepts knowledge as desirable in itself. So far, so good. Now, the second point about questioning of all things, they mention this. There is no perfect knowledge and no perfect knower. Certainty, as a concept, is replaced by probability. All conclusions and decisions are more or less suspect. He, the man of science, must from time to time act or decide always with incomplete evidence, by incomplete intellectual devices, with even incomplete means of reading results, and the final quote, incompleteness rules science. Well, my friends, the students are being told it's a very great thing to have a longing to know and understand and a questioning of all things, but they're told in advance that there's no use questioning because there aren't any answers. They're told in advance there are no absolutes. Incompleteness rules science. You cannot know. There aren't any answers. There isn't probability, but possibility, and you can't come to know exactly. There is no perfect knower. Now, the third point, the search for data and their meaning, they said much of science consists of the acquisition and ordering of data, but data taken by themselves normally has very little meaning. The principal contribution of scholarship to an understanding of the world is found not in such data, but in theories which explain phenomena. Scientists often refer to these theories as conceptual schemes. Well, I won't take time to give you all seven, but the fourth point, just a little bit of a tidbit here and there. Knowledge is at best hypothetical. The fifth point, logic is the science of inference. The sixth point, there is a limit to fruitful inquiry into one's premises and assumptions. In this effort, too, certainty is unobtainable. The seventh point, to hold to a value or to decide upon an action without awareness of its implications or its consequences is to believe or act in partial ignorance. If a single word summarizes the various characteristics of the scientific spirit, according to this booklet, it is awareness of the uncertainty of knowledge. Well, my friends, when you look into what these college students are being taught, it is no wonder that a lot of them are uncertain and confused and frustrated. Now, they're told that there are no absolutes, that the scientific spirit is the spirit of questing, but knowing in advance that you're not going to find the answers. And believe me, this is nowhere quite so insidious as in the humanities or the field of sociology and anthropology and zoology, biology, but especially psychology and all of the related studies involving the human psyche or human conduct and morality in anything that has to do with the spiritual aspect of man. I want to show you what the results of this kind of teaching are, because if it works, it ought to bring happiness. It ought to bring fulfillment. It ought to bring peace and contentment. It ought to bring a feeling of security. It ought to bring a positive goal in life. It ought to bring order out of chaos. It ought to be teaching students a sense of values to which they can cling and which give them the fulfillment and that feeling of really knowing that they apparently went to college to achieve in the first place. What is really being taught in the educational institutions of today? A group of teenagers on a panel were asked this. What holds you back from immoral conduct, or does anything? I want to show you some of the answers, because this is almost unbelievable. The first teenager said, that's a good question. You ever hear an answer like that before? You're asked a question and somebody says, that's a good question. It's like saying, you'd applaud, or you say, congratulations, you asked me a good question there, but there wasn't any answer. Now the second teen said, I couldn't say. Now, the third teen said the idea of God and concepts of religion don't tend to be real things. They're just something you can't look at face to face. They're kind of nebulous and far away. Well, it's no wonder your teenagers are saying they're kind of nebulous and far away, because they are being told there are no absolutes, that you can't know anything for sure. And the old field of German rationalism, of agnosticism and skepticism, and the idea that there is no God, you can't believe in anything that is permanent, nothing is permanent save change. Here's the thing that always amazes me. Nobody is so absolutely sure of anything except a believer that there are no absolutes. They believe there are no absolutes, and they are absolutely convinced that there are no absolutes. They're not willing to give the idea there could be a God, there could be permanence, there could be absolute moral standards a second look. I ask you, is that really fair? Well, now these teens were asked as to what held them back from immoral conduct. Of course, a lot of them asked, what is immorality immediately? Some of them are coming to. The biggest question is, said one of them, how can you know absolute truth? Here's a kid about 19. He's had funneled into his mind all of this garbage that goes in the sort of a label of education. And he is being told by professors who haven't proved it to him one way or the other that he can't know absolute truth, and so he swallows it. It reminds you of a pet crow or a pet parrot. He just says it because he's heard it enough and he hasn't proved it one way or the other. And he says the biggest problem is, how can you know absolute truth about sex or anything else? It's so nebulous and so far away. Now another boy said, well, you have to come back to the fact that we don't know absolute law. Listen to this poor kid. He doesn't believe in absolute law. He doesn't believe in gravity. He doesn't believe in the cleavage properties of minerals. He doesn't believe in stratigraphy. He doesn't believe in the fact of life. He doesn't believe that he exists. He doesn't believe in reproduction. I'll tell you something that's absolute, kids, teenagers. I'll tell you one thing that's absolute. Once the girl comes home and says, Mama, I'm in trouble, that's real absolute. You can know that for sure in advance. You can know positively that there is somehow somebody set up, or somehow it happened. Whatever your excuse is to how it got there, there is a law that says when an illicit or a premarital pregnancy takes place, I mean it's already taken place, and when she's in trouble, it's absolute. Oh, there are all kinds of absolutes. There are absolute laws, and you can absolutely prove it. But people like to parrot all of this stuff and shy away from proving it to themselves. Now, another kid said, there aren't any specific standards, like on the first date you can only hold hands, or on the second or the fifth date you allow him to kiss you. You set the standards for yourself, said this young teenage girl. Another one said, I am sure that I see quite a few people of our age who are very immoral, but that is by my standard, said this kid. And, of course, who is to judge what is right or what is wrong? Why, we're not ignorant, my friends, of cause and effect. We're not ignorant of the fact that there is a cause for every effect, that there is a cause for crime, there is a cause for divorce, there is a cause for premarital pregnancy. Something causes it, you know. We're not ignorant of this. But here is the product of our educational institution. Now, an outstanding senior, a graduating senior at one of these better-known universities, said this. Here's what he'd been taught. Here's what he believed. And I quote his words. This is a world of madness. Absurd, stupid, nothing solid. He said there are no values to depend upon. And he said, rather hesitatingly, well, I have no values because there is no basis for them. He's parroting the words of his professors who haven't told him the truth. Now, an athlete argues, well, you've got to say something inside you is there that tells you the difference from right and wrong. But he says, I sure wish I had that thing. He admitted, I don't have it. I don't really know what the difference is one way or the other. I want to tell you, my friends, that this is not crackpot thinking. That this is not, I'm not talking about some wild-haired dropout who's lying down here reveling in the yard with somebody on an LSD trip who has dropped out not only from college, but maybe from all society. This isn't a once-in-a-while, once-upon-a-dream idea that one or two kids have said. This is the voice of the youth of the United States of America today. This is the product of our modern educational institutions who have lost their way and who admit themselves that they are groping in the dark. They admit themselves they don't know what to teach and how to teach it. It seems to me that education has jumped the tracks of sanity. And instead of teaching youths any sense of values, instead of answering the really big questions that really count in life, they're filling their minds with a lot of senseless ideas, a lot of endless arguments, and at the end of it all telling them there's no use worrying, you're not going to find that one paragraph marked with a magical X that tells you all the answers that you've been worrying about all this time. They condition them in advance. They tell them that they cannot know. They tell them there is no knowing, that there is nothing for sure. They say what you have to do, listen to this incredible little bit of nonsense, is to find the answer inside of yourself. Now, you are a collection of all of your heredity, of your environment, of the experiences that have made you what you are, of all the other influential personalities with whom you've come in contact, and everything that you know that is in your mind got there since you were born by the channel of your five senses. And you know, a lot of people have a lot of things in their minds that shouldn't have got there, and a lot of it is a little bit of false knowledge and ought to be checked. You ought to look into the source of your belief and find out. Looking for the answer within ourselves isn't working. Education ought to provide the answers to the biggest questions of all. What are we? Why are we? What are we doing here? Where are we going? What is the way to peace? What is the way to material as well as mental and physical happiness and fulfillment? You know, the old statement, the best things in life are free, still holds, because regardless as to how much money you've got, you can't buy a physically healthy body, and you cannot buy a stable mind, and you can't buy good sound emotions, and you can't buy mental and moral and spiritual happiness and a sense of contentment and well-being. You're living in a world that is filled with contented cows and miserable people. A Western world of a lot of full wallets and pocketbooks and real empty minds and lives. And it's time you found out exactly why. There is a way to peace. There is a way to happiness, to productivity, to success. There is a way to fulfill the really big desires in everybody's heart and mind if we were only willing to look for that way. Now, I'm going to offer you a booklet. And it's without charge. It's absolutely free on the seven laws. And I am going to challenge in this booklet anybody who says there are no absolutes to read this booklet and to see for himself that every last one of these principles are absolutely and positively sure, and they really work. These are laws, seven laws to success, that answer the question, just what is success in the first place? What makes a success? Millions of people today are frustrated and miserable, and suicide is becoming a giant problem in the world today. Many people are successful at committing suicide. Well, would you say that is really a success for somebody to take his own life? Here is a booklet that provides answers to the really important questions that might plague you. How do you make a financial success? What is the right goal? What about right education? How do you achieve it? Do you stick to it when the going is really bad? A practical, down-to-earth, everyday booklet that really gives you the answers about the biggest questions you've wondered about. What is a success in the first place? This booklet shows you. Now also, if you want to know exactly what this program is all about, then the one booklet that I can tell you about more than any other that will tell you precisely what I'm doing here is the booklet on The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. Now, the World Tomorrow program is heard around the world. We're on a network of stations all over Australia, in the Philippines, in Asia. We can be heard out on Guam and the states, far-flung states of Hawaii and Alaska and all over the United States, all over Canada, all over Europe. And in other languages, in the Spanish language, the German and the French language in Europe. The World Tomorrow can be heard where you are daily. If you want to write for the magazine that I'll tell you about in a few moments and get the radio log, but the one booklet that tells you more than any other about what we are, what we stand for, what we're trying to do, is entitled The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. It shows you how today you see chaos, and it shows you how tomorrow this world is going to erupt into peace. How today you're living under the cloud of the threat of human extinction, but tomorrow real utopia is going to break out on this earth. And it answers the questions where you will be only a few years from today. In this colorfully illustrated booklet, absolutely free of charge, we take a calm look at today's glittering technological world of a Disneyland-like science world of glamour and gadgetry. And we ask the question, is this really satisfying people? Is it leading them toward what they really want? We take a look at the turmoil in far-off nations, at the trouble spots in the Western Hemisphere and elsewhere around the world, and we take a look at the problems of government, of race, of language, the growing problems of the proliferation of nuclear weapons. We take a calm look, in short, at the entirety of the world panorama today and all the attempts of the big powers to solve our big problems. And then we show how in the admissions of these world leaders, world peace is utterly impossible in the hands of man. But this booklet gives you the answer. It shows you how in the future you're going to see what once was a desert, parched area of non-productivity, a beautiful, verdant pasture land. It shows you how vast agrarian reform is going to come to the earth, how linguistic reform, religious reform, governmental reform, every kind of a really needed solution that you hear about all the time is finally going to be achieved. Now, I repeat, this booklet is absolutely free of charge. There's no reason for you to miss this absolutely free booklet, colorfully illustrated. Nobody's going to call on you. Your name is carefully guarded and kept. No one is going to send you a bill. There is no come on for money whatsoever. This booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like, is absolutely without cost. It's free of charge. We'll send it to you by return mail as quickly as we receive your request for it. Also, I want to tell you about a wonderful magazine, and you can have it year after year. Month after month, your subscription has been paid by others, and yours comes to you absolutely free of charge. It's entitled The Plain Truth, a magazine that is without peer, that is absolutely unique. Now, this magazine is published on three continents. It's published in Australia, Great Britain, and the United States. It's read by perhaps 4 million people every single month. Articles, up-to-the-moment articles on the really big world news events, on the outflow of American wheat to foreign countries, articles that deal with the growing problems in Great Britain, of the economic problems there, written from our editors abroad in Britain from on the spot, pictures that show you exactly what's happening in the United States race for the moon with Russia. And our overseas editors and photographers always have pictures from on the spot in full, beautiful color from world leaders on the scene. Articles dealing with evolution, with where did the universe come from? What about the origin of life? Articles involving the spread of communism and the threat of worldwide communism. Articles showing the president's trip to Asia and to other places on the earth. Articles about the new treaties that are made inside Western Europe, of Manescu's visit to Bonn. Articles showing French President Charles de Gaulle's visit to the South Pacific. And articles about an emerging third power bloc in Central Europe. Articles that show you the meaning of what's happening in America's deep involvement in Vietnam. Articles about Adenauer's death and the visit of President Johnson, the new concessions that Kiesinger won during that visit. It all comes to you absolutely free of charge, without price. Now, you want to see the Ten Commandments made clear and plain in the light of today's world news? You want to see exactly what the Ten Commandments are? What are they? A lot of people don't know. They just think, well, a couple things it says don't do. They think it says thou shalt not do this or that. You'd like to have your neighbors keep them, but maybe you think you're a little suspicious toward them yourself. Well, it's about time you saw them in the cold light of day. The Ten Commandments go directly contrary to human nature. So I'm going to make a shocking statement. I'm going to say something. You know, you've heard the there ought to be a law comment time and again, no doubt. There ought to be a law against this or that. I'll tell you what there ought to be a law against. There ought to be a law against human nature. Because human nature, by its very meaning and at its inception from the time of birth, human nature is criminal. Every baby is born, believe it or not, a delinquent. Every baby is born delinquent, and he must be reared out of that delinquency. He must be trained and reared to become a respectful, law-abiding member of any orderly community. But they're not being taught that today because people have thrown the idea of there being a God out the window, and they've certainly thrown over the idea of following the teachings of that God and following his laws. Just what are the Ten Commandments? Are they applicable today in this modern space age? Do they make any sense? Should you obey them? You ought to see them in modern language, and I've got a free booklet for you that will show you precisely that, entitled The Ten Commandments. And it will show you step by step exactly how they are applied today. And it's free of charge. You can have it by return mail if you will write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California, for this free booklet on the Ten Commandments. And so until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.